They can be a great people, Kullo. They wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all, this reason, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to Behind the Panels, issue 52, or is that new 52? The comic book podcast that has an imaginary friend called the Great Gazoo. I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
And joining us once again in the studio is our good friend Dave Longo from DamnGoodCup.com. Dave, welcome back.
Hi guys, how are you?
So once again, we've got two Daves in the studio.
And the standing rules apply. I am David, he is Dave.
And I can use this with impunity.
Oh, take your tampon out, Dave.
For those who don't know what that's from, go back and watch, listen to the last issue where we played the Kick-Ass trailer.
And it is another time for a warning, so we'll be playing a second Red Band trailer that has more naughty language in it, so
I think we're fast losing that clean tag of ours. We're growing up. We're out of short pants.
Well, between now and then, in this Easter issue, because we're recording this on Easter Sunday, Marvel relaunches.
Why are we recording?
I don't know. And I'm hungover.
Wait for the sermon at the end of the show.
Yeah. I tell you what, I could use some communion wine right about now, let me tell you. Marvel relaunches its graphic novel line. Christopher Lee gets villainous for DC, although I think I took that story out of the show notes. And you can soon play with your fables. Then, the Secret Service set for cinemas, that's hard to say. Trailers for the Wolverine Kick-Ass 2 and... again, another story I think I've taken out of the show notes, something about Batroc the Leaper. Plus, our Kick-Ass pick of the week for Happy.
You are hungover.
Let's re-record.
Plus, our Kick-Ass pick of the week.
Happy Easter, everyone.
Our Kick-Ass pick of the week, Happy by Grant Morrison and Derek Robertson. This is Behind the Panels. He can't even hit the button in time.
It's all metafiction, guys.
Hello world, hear the song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
We had a dream, we'd go traveling together. We'd spread a little love and it would keep moving on. Something always happens whenever we're together. We get a happy feeling when we're singing a song. Traveling along, there's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy. We'll make you happy. We'll make you happy.
If one thing's going to wake you up, it is the Partridge Family.
I think we've also set the tone for the show with all the mistakes that just happened at the beginning. We're
all hallucinating. We edited those all out, didn't we? No, we didn't.
We're all hallucinating a little blue horse right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wait, it's not a hallucination.
It's 1, 2, 3, 4,
5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 steps
above a hallucination. just because I can actually say this time, yes. Happy is this week's book. David, thank you for covering for me.
It's okay.
Today, the part of Richard will be played by David McVeigh.
Welcome to Behind the... I can't do it.
The vintage clip of the week this week, because it's an Easter episode as well, is kind of about an imaginary friend, but not really. It's sort of, but not. It's someone that... I'm just going to play the clip.
What are you up to?
We're here to get some eggs to color for Easter.
Marcy here fried the last batch.
This kid isn't quite with it, Chuck.
I think it's a waste of time to buy and color eggs, because the Easter Beagle will do all that.
Hey, Chuck, what's all this about an Easter Beagle? Has your friend here got all his marbles?
Well...
He did say Beagle, didn't he?
Well, yeah.
Boy, Chuck. You sure have some strange friends. But come on, Chuck. Let's go in and buy some eggs. Easter Beagle, indeed.
Christmas decorations up.
Good grief.
Good grief.
That was, of course, from the 1974 TV special, It's the Easter Beagle, Charlie Brown.
Very cool. That brings back a lot of memories, actually.
Yeah.
I used to watch the Charlie Brown cartoons all the time.
And I think for the rest of the show, we should do this as the adults from those cartoons. Yes, no, actually, little correction on the intro there. I am not hungover. I'm still drunk.
Now, just be aware, people, that this is Easter Sunday we're recording this. So don't expect it to be perfectly organized here at this
Plus,
point.
Plus, we're talking about comic books, right?
That's so, right. Yeah. We're also
That's picture books.
Exactly. We're also talking about one of the more crazy books of the last couple of years. This is a Grant Morrison book we're talking about.
Yeah, and we all know that Grant Morrison's probably on drugs anyway. But
yes. But for the rest of us, we're back to a weekly show because
we're normal again!
Yay!
So it's around this time every episode that we look back at what we've been reading. Mm-hmm. And we've all been reading a lot of things. So let's fire up the What We've Been Reading machine.
Well, looks like we got ourselves a reader. Read between the lines, bitch.
I'm going to head this off if that's okay. Because what I'm talking about actually is in direct reference to last episode, because we did Tom Taylor's The Deep, and we actually talked about the fact that he's currently writing Injustice, which is the Injustice Gods Among Us prequel to The Game.
Is he an Australian?
He's an Australian. He is. Yeah. Right, okay. And so I thought, well, because we talked about it and we hadn't read it at that point, and Ryan, who was on the show last week, said it wasn't particularly good. I thought, I'm going to have a look at this and see, because The Game comes out on the 17th. It's around the corner now. Mm. And I thought, I'm going to have a look at this book and see what I mean, let's face it, it's Mortal Kombat with superheroes. What sort of story are we going to actually have with this thing?
How can it fail, really?
Well, yeah, exactly. So I went and had a look at it, and I read the first, I think it's 6 issues, 8 issues, whatever it is, of the digital comic now being compiled into print form. And I read it in print form, and then I read the digitals to conclude up to now, which is issue 11, I think, in digitals. 11 or 12, something like that. I actually quite liked it, and I thought it was kind of interesting. But I thought there was actually one line in it for Richard in particular, which I thought I have to share. Because out of all people, Richard would this would appeal to Richard, which is where Green Arrow actually grabs Harley Quinn at one point to save her life. Oh, because right. At this point, Superman is on a rampage and he's basically killed the Joker. Spoilers here, people, but he's killed the Joker. That's kind of how it begins. Yeah, it's kind of to put it in a nutshell, basically, the Joker has bored of Batman because it's just as constantly it's getting boring.
Yeah.
And so he decides to pick on Superman for a day because you know that'd be much more interesting. So he in the first pages, so I guess we're not really spoiling anything, but in the
Wasn't
first
this
pages
the plot to Kingdom Come
kind of, but a little bit more desperate in the sense that what the Joker does is he actually kidnaps Lois, who is pregnant with Superman's baby, rigs her heart to a detonator.
That's right.
To a nuclear device in Metropolis, and basically if her heart
as
stops, Metropolis will explode. He then rigs scarecrow gas with kryptonite and inflicts Superman with it, so he thinks he seems Doomsday, grabs Doomsday and flies him out to space. It's actually Lois, and he kills Lois and then destroys Metropolis.
What?
This is the opening of the book. And so basically he flies back down and puts his fist through Joker's heart.
This sounds exactly like the DC universe that I know and love.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's where it starts. And basically it's all about how Superman has now decided enough is enough, and he is now going to be the policeman for the entire world and stop everything and basically become a god, as everybody feared him. And it's actually an interesting read. And all I can think is, this is a much more interesting comic book than I think The Game will ever be. You know what I mean? And I'm actually intrigued to see where this alternate reality goes to. But the one thing that caught my eye was
This is a prequel.
This is a prequel to the game. That's right. And the thing that caught my eye was
Maybe the Flash will just...
Well, Flash has been in it. They've all been in it at this point. But the thing that really caught my eye at this point was the Green Arrow. They basically get Harley Quinn because they're trying to save her life because Superman's out for blood and he's going to kill everybody. So they get her and he whips her off to his Arrow Cave, if you remember the Arrow Cave, Richard.
Yes.
He whips her off to the Arrow Cave, handcuffs her to a pole and says, "This is for your own good. We're trying to save your life." And he goes, I'm keeping you here at the Arrow Cave. And she goes, "The Arrow Cave? That's a really stupid name for a cave." And he goes, but she goes, no, come on. The Bat Cave makes sense. Bats come from caves, but an Arrow Cave? You should have called it the Quiver. And Green Arrow's reaction is the best part where he goes, actually better. This is this beautiful moment where he just goes, that's actually better.
I want to read this.
But the other thing that I wanted to bring up in this book, though, is it is the most badass incarnation of Wonder Woman you're ever going to see. She's basically all in on this. She's following the man of her dreams, basically, which is Superman, basically saying he wants to make world order. He wants to go to war with everybody. I'm there. And off she goes. And she is ass kicking like nothing else. And there's a one panel I've got on screen right now where on this screen where basically she's landed in front of these insurgents with tanks and stuff like that, and they're shooting at her, and basically she just all the bullets just bounce off of her, and then she just has a close-up of her eyes where she actually just says, drop your weapons, turn and run away. And the next panel is you just see them all running away. And this is like, there's a beautiful moments in this book. It's actually not super well written, it's not super well drawn, but it's an intriguing enough concept that I'm in. I'm very curious to see where they take this and if they're going to keep writing it even after the game comes out.
That sounds really cool, because like I was going to buy the game.
I'm buying the game. I've got the game on pre-order. Yeah. So,
and so like this just adds like a, you know,
yeah, apparently when you buy the special edition of the game, you'll get the first two issues of this in print form with the game anyway.
Yeah, awesome.
It is going on as it's, I don't know if it's free or not, but it is. It's on Comixology. It's a digital release.
It's digital only
until they get a certain number, and then they release.
Yeah, they're doing that with Arrow and a few other ones, and Smallville, I think.
But I think that if you're interested in this game at all, if you're interested in alternate realities, I always like alternate Superman stories. It's one of the things that I really liked about Irredeemable was the concept of saying, "What if a Superman character?" went bad, or in this case, what if Superman did decide to be the god that everybody thinks he is? What if you crossed him? These are really interesting stories for me, because you look at it and go, the man is invulnerable, stronger than anybody else on the planet, can fly faster than the speed of light. This is an unstoppable god, and in that sort of situation, what the hell do you do with that, you know?
There's anyway, some fascinating things with Superman.
Yeah, so I always find that's much more interesting than the actual straight Superman stories, as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, that's what I've been reading, aside from a billion X-Men comics.
Yeah, like we're still running through the Uncanny X-Men, because we're doing our special next week, which we hope you're reading and catching up with as well. The two things I want to mention that we've read this week, probably the two things a lot of people are reading this week, and two things that people are having trouble getting their hands on this week, would be Guardians of the Galaxy and the ran off the shelves immediately East of West. Now, Guardians of the Galaxy was one we were all looking forward to in a big way. We're all big fans of the previous Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning run, and we were all excited to see that Brian Michael Bendis was taking over Guardians of the Galaxy. So now that it's actually out, issue one is finally here after about three issues preempting issue one. There was the point one issue. There was the Marvel Now point one.
They've been milking this
thing. There was
the
Infinite Comics, which gave a little bit of, you know, where are they now for Drax and Rocket Raccoon. The Rocket Raccoon one's hilarious.
There's another one of me.
Yeah. Which that seems like it's going to go off on its own tangent as well. So, look, you know, this picks up at some stage after the Thanos Imperative. We don't know how much time has passed. It seems to be real time, because they always seem to run Guardians in real time with Earth. And also Peter Quill's back. They're all in new uniforms. So the big lingering question in this issue, which is never addressed immediately, of course, because it's going to be the big mystery of this series, is how the hell did Peter Quill get back from the Cancerverse at the end of Thanos Imperative? And
where the hell is Richard Rider?
Where the hell's Richard Rider?
Where's Rider?
And why have they all got new uniforms? So, you know, time enough has passed for them to reform and to
Do you guys have a sort of guess of what the time frame would be?
It's hard to tell.
We're kind of guessing that this has got to be a good 8 to 10 years since the last series, because that's like what we're talking about, isn't it?
Oh, well, we're talking. We ended in 2000, beginning of 2011, I think. Was it Thanos Imperative ended?
Oh, that's Thanos Imperative. I'm thinking of Guardians. Guardians finished a while ago.
Guardians finished in 2010. So it ran from
2008. We're talking, what, 3 years, maybe 4 years.
So it ran from 2008 to 2010, and then Thanos Imperative followed it. And then following that was the Annihilators,
which was pretty much writing off at this point.
It was the further adventures of Groot and Rocket Raccoon following that. Because they didn't really, the Guardians weren't really in Annihilators. They were, it was just
a
new team that Peter Quill had said that he wanted them to put together because, you know, somebody needed to protect the galaxy.
The question is, are they going to bring Cosmo into this? Are we going to go to nowhere at some time?
Yeah, like all those guys, like Mantis and Bug. And,
where are the rest of the Guardians? What happened to them? Although, if we do remember going back, the rest of them were pretty pissed off at Peter Quill at certain points.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
there's a lot of animosity in that team.
Mm.
But
the interesting thing is, and the reason that there was a whole lot of backstory about his father in Bendis's prequel run is that this story seems to be very much focusing on Peter's relationship with his dad.
Mm.
And it actually starts off in a bar with the great scene where Gamora gets involved in a bar fight. With Peter, his dad basically saying, because his dad is the king of the Spartoi, and said, look, the earth is now under my protection. You people will not. No one is allowed to go near Earth. It's under my protection. The earth is now off limits completely, which Peter thinks is red rag to a bull. He thinks as soon as you say the earth is off limits, the entire
universe wants it.
Wants it then. So, in fact, as soon as they arrive with the Guardians and Tony Stark happens to be flying by as well, which is the start of Tony Stark, Iron Man, now being part of the Guardians for this run, Badoon invasion commences. And Peter wonders whether or not his father knew him so well that if he'd asked him to go and protect the Earth, he'd say no out of stubbornness. But because his father told him not to do it,
he's doing it.
The first thing he did was to go and protect the Earth, and it's a bit, you know, Peter Quill, for him, it's the right thing to do.
I think it's a great start to this series, but there are a lot of questions.
I guess the best question would be: would you guys have preferred it more if it had started with, like, you know, let's get the gang back together? And
Well, that was the thing I was saying to you guys before the show, that one of the issues I have with this first issue is that I think I'm fine with it. You guys are probably all fine with it. We know who these characters are.
Mm.
And for us, it's just picking up, you know, albeit with a lot of questions, us picking up where we left off in a lot of ways. For new readers, which this massive, massive 16 variant cover launch is designed at, and I joked last week that it was 17 variant covers, and then I actually went and got the issue, and there's a cover gallery in the back.
there's actually
16 variants. Some of them are beautiful. I only got one of them, which was the and I might get a few of the others, which was the
Joker Seder.
No, it's the one with Gamora on the cover.
Oh, okay. Gorgeous picture.
Beautiful, beautiful thing. I've actually got the photo on my wallpaper on my phone. Massive, massive launch. Why would they sort of throw us in without really giving new readers any setup as to who the Guardians of the Galaxy are?
Now, especially
given that currently there is no way beyond going back and buying single issues at great expense, or, you know, that other not-so-legal way.
Just thinking of it now...
That storyline.
Sorry, Richard. Yeah. Just thinking of it now, do you think perhaps there's an element of the film coming out and acting as the introduction, the origin of these characters, and then the idea being that...
Yeah. That might be their plan, but the film is still 2 years away. And I mean, when you sit there and you go...
But still, in comic book time, that's only really, what, like... 12
plus
issues.
But in real
time,
they've got to sell the issues today. And that's
the problem.
The thing is, but like, I don't know if I'd agree with you there, because the thing, like, everyone buying the Guardians right now, it's like us.
Yeah.
You know, like, we love these guys.
Yeah, I think it is.
As Richard's saying, like, who really knows?
But the whole concept of Marvel now was to give a starting point
for new
readers.
You're actually right. It's issue one.
As an issue one, it needs to be able to get a new reader in.
Mm.
Is there enough backstory with the point one and everything else to be able to get new readers in? Mm. That's the question. Yeah.
Well, and the other thing we were saying before, there's all this other point one stuff, the point one book, the Infinite Comics and all that sort of stuff, beyond people like us, who's reading them?
Exactly.
I mean, people who follow comics news online and find out about these things. You know, they do advertise them in the actual books themselves. The other issue I had, and I don't know if you guys agree with this, is that I missed some of DNA's trademark humor in that book.
Agreed.
For me, that was one of the big appeals of that book. Was just
Rocket wasn't funny.
The thing is, you didn't have a lot of repartee between the characters at all. Yeah, Rocket wasn't funny at all. And you were saying, Dave, that you missed just the way
the
they
yellow
lettered,
dialogue
the,
yeah, bubbles. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Because it gave you this visual sense that his voice was different, the same way that the
it seems more. It's like, hey, you know, look at this raccoon, not a raccoon.
Mm.
Look at this raccoon. I'm not a raccoon. Yeah. Look at this raccoon with a bazooka, and it's like he was a bit more than that. My big issue with it was like the
DNA made him more than that.
Yeah,
he
exactly.
always was like a token weird character before that, and then DNA.
I also have to say, I actually. And this is going to be really old school of me, and I know you can't go back. I miss the old uniforms. I know. Yeah. I like the armor, and I like the concept of the beginning battle armor down the track, but I miss the uniforms.
You're not the first one. I actually read a review, and I can't remember who actually wrote it, but it was a review said, I would have left them in the old uniforms for at least the first couple of issues.
Yeah.
Mm. And then had this big moment where they finally came back together as a team and got new uniforms.
Like DNA, remember when you first meet Peter Quill in that run? You know, he's got the robotic eye,
he's got the implants,
you know, the implants, and then later on he get, you know.
Yeah.
Well, the uniforms came about, the blue uniforms with the red trimming came about with Guardians of the Galaxy.
It was in the Annihilation Conquest thing that they first got together.
When they actually formed as a team.
That's the origin, really.
Like, the origin is that Dirty Dozen getting them all out of prison and doing the deed.
Is there perhaps an element of that in this?
How do you mean?
In that, like, the key readership, like people like us, or have they been expected to have sort of gone through the cosmic?
Well, it's if they want new readers, they have to release it as a trade-out.
Yeah, I would love to see a big, because it's only 25 issues.
For me, it's real. You guys are probably the same. For me, it's mostly an issue of what happened to Richard Rider.
Yeah,
what happened in between? Hmm. I'm not sort of seeing they're going like, how did he become Star-Lord? I don't care
about all that stuff. I just want to know what happened between those two periods of time.
Yeah, I know. That's exactly my point. But, like, new readers, they're going to have the issue of, like, what's going on? I think the thing is,
that's a really interesting point, though, because, new readers don't want the first issue that's filled up with going, you know, in the last 5 years, this happened. And so it starts off on this really complicated foot. So what Bendis has done here is given them a problem in the first issue. They've come together to fight that problem, and I think we'll be slowly spoon-fed that backstory over the coming issues. So my issue is not what happened in between. It's just that I feel as though, you know, did I not know the backstory? I wonder what a new reader would think of this universe.
It kind of makes you wonder what reading of that comic book would have been like.
Yeah.
We can't read it that way because we know we've got too much history.
Yeah, exactly. We should probably move along.
Just one thing I want to mention quickly before... Just to ask you guys, I'm really interested in your opinion on this. How would you have felt if Iron Man wasn't a part of the new team?
The one thing I would say about that is I actually don't think he should be part of the team yet. No. I think they should have let Guardian stand on its own for a few issues and then have... If anything, I would have introduced the whole thing... You know, if you've been reading the Iron Man comics at the moment, the things he's going through, I would have brought in the Guardians to help him out of that mess. You know what I mean? But that way the Guardians could have stood on their own to start with for the first couple of issues.
And then at least as long as Tony Stark's in space, they can always be team-ups and stuff.
Exactly. I'm not sure. I think it almost feels like the new reader issue again, where they're saying, well, they won't accept them as they are. Let's put in somebody they know. You know?
Mm. I think I might have read a little bit too much into it because I liked how inept Tony Stark was amongst the team.
Yeah,
like, the everything happens, the battles...
He
gets knocked unconscious and then left to drag him through. And
he's not used to all that
kind
cosmic
of
shit.
A subtext there, you know.
He's not used to all that cosmic shit. Yeah. The only person we haven't heard from is you.
Ah, let's talk about the Age of Ultron. Which is, as far as I'm concerned, the only way to say it. You guys haven't read...
I haven't read the third. I've read the first two. Can I just say very quickly about that, though? Age of Ultron suffers the same problem as Guardians does. It's also Bendis, which is... just starting.
Well, I think he's very deliberately done it, though, in that case. I think because we don't know when this is.
And I think it works in Age of... I think it works for Ultron because we're kind of in this mini-series and we don't know what's going on. Hopefully it's all going to unfold, whereas Guardians is an ongoing. Anyway, what was it like?
I really like it at the moment, actually. I like these, like, epic sci-fi elements to it. But as you guys have been saying, I don't think there's enough there yet to really dig in.
It's an intriguing concept.
It's too confusing.
It hooked me from the start. The first issue of Age of Ultron, as you said, just threw you straight in. And I really love that idea of this kind of superheroes on the run. You know, no one trusts each other. That whole, the fact that Captain America in the very first issue was kind of beaten down and that reveal at the end of the first issue, actually, it's everyone sort of fighting for survival, and the first and the last thing you see in the first issue is Captain America completely disheartened.
There's a pretty massive reveal at the end of the latest issue.
Right.
And I'll talk around it, but it asks the question of, is Ultron actually here?
Mm.
That's what it directly asks you. So that's kind of interesting to wonder what and where is Ultron and what's going on.
So far, we've only seen minions of Ultron.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And there's something pretty specific. When you guys read it, you'll be like,
It'll be an interesting one. The only other book I really, really, really want to mention is East of West.
Yes.
Which is phenomenal read. It is has to be probably one of the best debuts this year, and I use that knowing full well I overuse hyperbole, but this this is a book.
He's not joking. It was
this
stunning.
Is Jonathan Hickman is writing this. He's also writing Avengers and New Avengers at the moment. You probably know him previously. He did Fantastic Four and FF runs, and he's one of his the artist on this was with him on FF. This is a sci-fi, western, post-apocalyptic sort of fantasy, other world, elseworlds, alternative history book, sort of much like some of his... He's written, you know, previous stuff that have been alternative histories. It's kind of... It's got a great setup in that the backstory is that around the time of the Civil War... all the Indian nations got together and formed a great nation. And so there was a third kind of they were fighting a war on several fronts there. Then there was this great apocalyptic event which caused everyone to stop and the US was split and form a new union and the US was split into seven different nations. And it's like the Republic of Texas and then there's the zone in the middle and then there's and all these different areas and it's kind of like, you know, where California is kind of like an area and so that's an intriguing premise to start with.
Yeah.
But then you throw into that as well that the four horsemen of the apocalypse have just been resurrected as children because they're resurrected every few years. One of them, I think is it Death?
It's possibly? Death. Yeah.
Death has gone rogue. Yeah. And setting off. And they want to kill the President of the United States. So this is this is the background to this book. It is phenomenal. It is...
Is this limited or ongoing?
It's ongoing.
It's ongoing. Oh, and right. It's... the first issue literally came out this week, flew off shelves. You can have a look. We're passing a copy over to David now just to have a look at the artwork. But I don't think I've just been more intrigued by content this year. And I know I'm
from the very gushing. First page, you just feel this incredibly rich mythology... And it's just really intriguing.
It's clearly a book,
and
where,
it's violent, and it's
violent as hell. It's kind of like somewhere between Preacher and
a really good reference is Stephen King's The Dark Tower series. I don't know if you guys have read that. It shares a lot of elements.
Nick Dragotta is the artist, and it's phenomenal art, and the coloring is also amazing.
It's really stark as well, though. And the coloring is really defined, sharp colors. There's not a lot of gray.
It's funny, and it's interesting how that's become a big style lately as well. That kind of slightly muted color palette, but really defined, kind of like the stuff we're seeing in
Hawkeye.
Matt Hollingsworth in Hawkeye and his coloring in that. And, it happened in Daredevil as well. And I think there was something else we were reading recently that had that very similar stark, muted color palette. And I'm loving it in East of West. So, look,
New Edwardians is a little bit like that as well.
New Edwardians, that's right. That was the other one that we did recently. Look, if you can't find this on shelves, it's available digitally. So do yourself a favor.
I will definitely be reading that tonight. So,
Look, I think we should probably push on from what we've been reading. Because we've been talking about things for half an hour, so let's have a little bit of this.
What a scoop!
Stir!
I was hoping you were going to do that. Yes.
Thank you for that.
Look, a few of the stories I mentioned at the top, I actually took out of a show note, so
too bad.
Probably won't hear some of those here, but there's some big news actually broke at the very last minute this week. One of the things, and you'll find the story on behindthepanels.net, is that a new era has arisen for Marvel in July, so with the end of Age of Ultron, we've just been talking about, there will be a new book called Avengers AI. Now, Avengers AI, and I'm just going to bring up the press release here now, it's basically the robot Avengers.
Cool. So we're going to bring back Jocasta, are we?
Possibly. We got somebody with large breasts. It's gonna
okay. That describes every comic book.
It's gonna be it's gonna be written by Sam Humphries, who's doing Uncanny X-Force. It's gonna be drawn by Andre Araggio, who's doing FF, and with the covers by Dustin Weaver. So it looks quite good. It's an all Android Avengers team, so it's gonna spin straight out of Age of Ultron. It's been the team is basically gathered together by Hank Pym, the Vision leads Victor Mancha, Doombot, and the mysterious Alexis.
I assume Alexis is this girl.
Is the girl with the large mechanical breast.
Yeah.
In a race to contain unfathomable Pandora's box of destruction.
Oh.
And which side will Monica Chang? I think she might be Monica Chang. It might be the woman with the large breast, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, okay.
Find herself on. So it just goes on to say, can I lead them into the digital unknown? Sam Humphries says, I couldn't be more psyched about ushering the Avengers and Marvel Universe into the age of AI, which actually confirms what we were talking about last week, is that the age of Ultron will lead into the age of AI.
Yeah.
So, and we've seen this before, like when we had the heroic age and those sorts of things in the comics.
Yeah.
So this will be...
Well, the heroic age was spawned by Siege.
Yes.
Yeah.
So things like that. So this is. I think, you know, Marvel now has given people a jumping on point, and now this is Marvel's next big thing.
Right.
So, actually, that's a good point. Is Age of Ultron labeled a Marvel Now title?
Yes,
it is. Yeah,
I think
it
so.
Is.
I think yeah. so. I'll confirm that.
Have a look at one of the covers
because that could point. I guess.
Yeah. No, that's. Look, it's a good. I mean, look. The thing is, even if it's, I don't let continuity get in the way of good story. So it's. I don't care if they have seven different continuities.
It's comic books.
They're all good stories.
You make your own continuity.
Actually, no.
It's not. Oh, there you go.
It's not.
It's just Marvel. It's not Marvel Now. So.
The other thing that Marvel has announced, which is quite exciting, is they're relaunching their graphic novel line. With original graphic novels. The first one of these is going to be called Avengers Endless Wartime. It's going to be written by Warren Ellis and Mike McCone. It looks kind of amazing, actually. It's going to be, and they've also got another book out. It's you know that TV series Once Upon a Time.
Yep.
Yeah, they're doing a in canon graphic novel for that as well. So it's going to be because obviously it's all owned ABC, Disney, Marvel. They're all owned by the same people now. But so
how incestuous it all is now.
Yeah, I know, right? So this basically it's going to be, you know, Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, Hawkeye, Wolverine, and Captain Marvel all playing together. In this Avengers Endless Wartime. If you go to the Marvel's official site, you'll see a little bit of the artwork there.
I used to love the dedicated Marvel graphics novels. It all kind of started in the 80s, remember, with Sensational She-Hulk and all that sort of stuff.
What are these?
These are standalone graphic novels. They're just like one story, but they're like...
They're not put out
hundreds
single
of pages.
Issues.
They're not put out single issues. They're beautifully presented, so they're on like glossy paper. They were actually like a deluxe comic book. And they generally, the ones I thought was, Death of Captain Marvel was one of them.
Yes.
And they had like a black, they were always like printed with a black cover.
That was their first graphic novel that they did. They came out in about 82.
Yeah, and Sensational She-Hulk was about 83, I think.
I've actually got a first edition of that Death of Captain Marvel.
So this means you can actually do like open and closed.
Open and closed stories, You can just do like a one-off story.
Standalones, And it's great. I actually, I think as time goes on.
Let's not forget Dazzler the movie.
And Dazzler the movie. I love graphic...
There's a graphic novel called Dazzler the movie.
Dazzler, I think, can be seen in Extreme X-Men before they cancel it, which is happening very soon.
She had the magical powers of pyrotechnics.
Pyrotechnics, of making little glittery things.
She was a rock star.
You're selling this to me and everybody else that's listening. You do realize.
Dazzler, I remember when I was seriously collecting comic books back in the 80s, I got Dazzler issue one. Dazzler was kind of introduced into the X-Men. She's a mutant and she's a pop star who can generate pyrotechnics. They're harmless, but they're like light shows. So on stage, she would do her own light shows, you know, and everybody thought she was really cool and all. But then, of course, I found out she was a mutant and she came on the run. And for a while, she was with the X-Men. And it was all just really, you sit there and go, her and Jubilee, I never actually saw a difference in as to what their powers were. But Dazzler was hot.
Bringing up the cover art for...
I've actually got Dazzler the movie if you'd like to read it.
It's who played her?
Sorry?
No, this is actually...
It's a comic book called
Dazzler
the
movie.
Because Dazzler goes off and becomes a movie star.
I thought you were talking about a real...
No. It's a graphic novel.
So it was a Marvel graphic novel line. They ran for... Well, that was number 12.
How come this is not part of Marvel Now?
Dazzler, because they've tried... Well, Dazzler's actually in... what is it? She's in... is it Extreme X-Men? No. Which one's she in?
Yeah, she's in Extreme.
Extreme X-Men.
Okay. Just the one with the traveling.
So she's still around. Dazzler's been around. She was given the real origin of Dazzler probably would have been the same era of Marvel that gave us Cloak and Dagger and a bunch of other stuff from that era. It was my era of comic books. And Dazzler, they kept trying to make a viable character. She had her own book for a while. She had her own standalone run.
And it just never took off.
And eventually she kind of became a sub-character of the X-Men. Various X-Men incarnations, and she's still around today. Mm. But I don't think they ever made her compelling enough, other than the fact that she wore a really, really spunky white costume with big cleavage, that she was ever that compelling. Mm.
There was a whole lot of them, though, when they brought out the Marvel graphic novels. There was The Death of Captain Marvel, yep. was the first one. There was like things like Elric, The Dreaming City.
I've got that.
There's a Dreadstar one, which has a giant cat on the cover. New Mutants one. God Loves, Man Kills was one of the most famous ones, yep. that came out. Chris Claremont one. There was also the Dazzler, the movie, as you said, Starstruck.
I read Starstruck.
There were in total, the original Gravel line, 38 original graphic novels.
Yeah.
There was a Willow one.
But they were on you know? They were on premium paper, so they were these beautiful imprints. They had this really nice artwork. They were like Marvel spent money on those, and the monthly stuff still ran, but these were like, and when you went into like,
were they fairly priced?
Yeah, they were actually reasonably priced.
And, you know, we're talking good creators as well, because there's things like, there was Love and War, it was a Daredevil one, which was written by Frank Miller with art by Bill Sienkiewicz.
Yeah.
It's an amazing line of stuff there.
And when you went into Minotaur back then, when Minotaur was a much smaller store, you had the wall of comic books, and then there was like a little side cap, which had the graphic novels. And then I think what happened was the comic book company started to go, oh, people will pay extra for a graphic novel, let's just combine issues together and call them graphic novels. And that was kind of like where graphic novels became. But graphic novels were a standalone thing. They were their own thing for a long time.
The thing I like about this, and I like about the whole idea of graphic novels, I prefer reading comics that way. Mm. Like, I mean, I love collecting comics weekly. I love the issues. I love having
the paper, the better the quality, that makes a huge difference.
Look, you know, I think it was actually funny when we'll talk about it a bit more. When we're doing Happy this week, I actually, even though that was released as single issues, I read those monthly. But when I sat down to reread it for the show, reading those four issues back to back as a collection effectively, you get a bit of flow to it. And I think if you can tell a story in that format, and let's face it, this is where comics have been going for a very long time.
And there are certain writers who write best in that short form format. Mm. Grant Morrison being one of them. Mm-hmm. Mark Millar is another one. Mark Millar, his series that are like four issues, five issues, or six issues long are his best stuff. Mm. When you look at, we did Superior. And you look at what was the one about the criminals? Super Crooks. Yeah. Or now he's got Secret Service, which he's wrapping up now. He's got Secret Service, got another two issues or three issues to go. But that's actually a long one for him. That's like eight issues, you know. Kick-Ass was another prime example. What was the one? God, it's got out of my head. Give me a head. The Angelina Jolie movie was based on it.
Wanted.
Mm. Wanted was a limited series as well. And this, I think, for certain creators, that is the format of choice. I think we can say Alan Moore definitely fits.
Oh, hell yeah!
You know,
well, it's funny because recently I've been reading The Invisibles by Grant Morrison, and I've purchased it in the omnibus format, which is this huge book. It weighs like 20 kilos. But it's heavy. You literally need a podium to read it. And it's the only negative I have for it, though, is how heavy it is.
Picking
the size of the paper and how beautiful it's almost cardstock. And it just, and the thing is that I first read The Invisibles, I picked up the first volume in trade paperback that Vertigo had, and I've been comparing that first volume to the omnibus, and the disparity is amazing. Mm. It's like, it looks like a completely different.
Those omnibus editions. I've got the Thor run, the classic, not the Straczynski run. There was
the one prior to that.
The big epic run where like.
But it's got Beta Ray Bill.
Beta Ray Bill was introduced and all that sort of stuff.
Is that a Straczynski run?
No. It's the
prior to Straczynski.
Prior to that was much earlier, and the stock in that and the coloring is beautiful. You've never seen it look that good. And I think Marvel really setting a high benchmark.
I got to say, though, generally, this is something we can all talk about very quickly. Generally, I could actually say, though, the comic book printing in general has is so much better today than it was. If you actually look at comic books from the 80s and the 70s, it's that cheap paper, it's mass produced, it's that three color print process that they were doing, blah, blah, blah. You look at comics, they're just the monthlies are on gloss paper, they're well put together. It's like, you know, you sit there, you look and go, there's a big difference to what they used to be.
This is the Walt Simonson run, by the way. So it's basically Thor's issue 337 through to more or less 382. So however many issues it is, plus Ball to the Brave, 1 to 4. So we're talking about, it's something like an 1,192 pages, this thing is. So
I remember also another interesting thing. I was reading, like, you know, the letter page for Saga. And we're talking about, like, Fiona Staples and her artwork in there. And she's entirely digital. And a funny thing about that is that she... you know what I'm talking
about? I think I know what you're talking about. Go on. Yeah.
It's like that when you're drawing and creating and colouring completely digitally, paper can never get close.
Yeah.
But the iPad...
can
it's 100%
digital
replication.
Well, this is the thing, and this
and
is
the closest you can possibly get to artistic intent.
And I think finally with a format like with the iPad or any digital reader format, we finally got what DVD and ultimately Blu-ray did for films, which was, you know, certainly the Pixar films, where you could create a copy directly from the digital source and have something that was even better than you saw in cinemas.
Well, I remember there was actually a big push, because when they said that I think it was Attack of the Clones was the first feature-length film, live-action feature-length film that was
shot
ever
entirely,
shot and presented entirely digitally. So it was like there were film negs mastered for other cinemas, but if you went to a digital cinema, you were seeing it in its exact format from shooting to editing to presentation. For a live-action film, and that was a big deal in its day.
Yeah. And look, I mean, look, I'm excited about this one. I'll definitely be getting these because good creators on them. And I think this is, if you go to Europe and you get, they already sort of don't put out the single. They put out single issues, of course, in comic book shops, but certainly in France, they've got on newsstands these kind of prestige format collections of books, which you just don't get here as much. It's usually three or four strung together. I'd like to see that happening more.
I love a good graphic novel. Yeah. A good graphic novel, you sit down, from beginning, Underwater Welder is a great example. You just sit down and you go, this is a story. When I'm done, I'm done. You know? Yeah. And it's like, it's a great...
And sometimes, like, stories that I really like, I tend to pile them up. Yeah. Like the single issues, and then read them in a sitting.
Well, I'm doing that at the moment. I'm actually doing that with Daredevil End of Days. I don't want to read anymore until it's finished.
Yeah, no, I've...
And then I'm going to run it in one run, because... I'm finding myself, it's breaking the flow.
Yes.
It is.
This is exactly what I was going to bring up. Because between us, how many comics do we read a month?
A lot.
It's like, I don't know if I can remember half the stuff that happened last month. And then I, you know, even happy.
I dare
happy,
say
you know.
That we're all reading at least 30, 40 individual comics a month.
At least.
And you can get an indication. If you're reading on iPad, as an example, like you throw your iPad, your stuff in there, and as you delete them, you're getting that tally of your deletions before you finish your deletions, and you can actually see the number of comics you've just chewed through.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I'll quickly run through some of these other stories, because
they're
been
so good.
Talking for a while. There's actually one story I didn't throw in because it just came over the wire, because WonderCon at the moment is on, and I just really like this, that there's going to be a new Rocketeer Spirit book written by Mark Waid coming out from IDW.
Okay.
So that should be kind of cool.
What was the last Rocketeer book that was running? It was Horrors of Hollywood, or
something
Hollywood
like
Horrors?
That. Yeah. But so I like the idea of Mark Waid writing that. There's also the other news coming up, just for comic news, is Telltale Games, who have done things like, they're doing the Walking Dead episode game, and they did things like Sam and Max.
Did they do the Back to the Future games?
Mm-hmm. They did the Back to the Future games as well. So they do episodic content. They're doing a Fables prequel, which is really interesting, and that was just announced with a little bit of a flurry. It's going to be called The Wolf Among Us. So it's not quite, it seems to be a detective story set before Fables. It's interesting that it's a Fables prequel because, you know, Fables does a lot of flashbacks.
I've got to read Fables.
Fables is
great. Yeah, same here.
We definitely... They're actually the...
Are you still reading Fables, Richard?
Look, I stopped reading it a while ago, but what I've started doing is getting the hardcover deluxe editions, and there's about 10 issues per deluxe edition, because, as I was just saying, I prefer reading it in
that
format.
Are you still reading Ferris, the spin-off?
No, I kind of haven't been catching up with that. And it's kind of like... But what I end up doing is, just like we've been talking about, because I sort of been really caught up with all the Marvel stuff at the moment, and I'm getting stuck into a lot of the new Image stuff, so stuff will sit on the back burner for a while, and then I'll just go through and binge, like, all, you know, the last 10 issues of Ferris, and I've got to do that with a few series. But this is... it'll center on Bigby Wolf, a.k.a. the Big Bad Wolf, cigarette-smoking, trench-coat-clad detective, So it's gonna he's kind of like the cop of Fable Town in a lot of ways. So and they said just as in Walking Dead, player choices will decide the fate of the characters. So that's so you know you can either choose to play as a Paragon style. I'm taking this from Eurogamer. You can either choose to play as a Paragon style wolf and keep everybody happy, or unleash his inner beast and decide to turn the little pigs into bacon. So I really like the concept. I really like the backstory. I would have liked to have seen something set back in before they all came to our reality, because the backstory of Fables is that they were all chased out of their homeland where Fables live by this great evil that swept across the land. But this is obviously since they've been in Earth, you know, history. So it'll be interesting to play. I'll definitely take a look because I love the whole Fables world. I love that whole thing. And you know, even though TV series like Once Upon a Time and Grimm are kind of doing that sort of stuff now, Fables are still the original and still the best of that kind of twisted fairy tale.
And there's all that stuff coming from what's that company called, Zenitrope or whatever it is, with the whole Grimm fairy tales and,
which is kind of doing the same thing again,
but very poorly.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you read that Sleepy Hollow one they put out?
No, I read the Robin Hood one.
And I love all things.
The one I read was awful.
One of my favorite memories from a kid was watching when they used to have the Disney in Color on television, and they used to play every Halloween or you know any scary event would be the episode where they just show a clip from Adventures of Sleepy Hollow, and it's that scene in the covered bridge where Ichabod Crane's going through, and you just hear. And getting faster and faster and faster, and then the Headless Horseman would come through, and I just freak out as a kid. So I love all things.
They should revive something like Tales of the Crypt, like in comic book form.
Yeah, well,
get heaps of different creators to do an issue. And
it's funny because they're bringing back a few sort of anthology things like that. But when they tried to do it at DC, like they tried to bring back Men of War, that kind of thing, it just failed.
Was the one that did release? You actually reviewed it favorably. Was it called Ghost or Ghosts?
Vertigo. Vertigo's just released a similar title this week, I think. Time Warp.
Which is
focusing on time travel stories.
Right.
So we may be seeing something along
the return
those
of
lines.
The anthology.
What we need to
but
do
the
is
anthology
need to see...
problem is the same across all of them. It's
we
like
need
the,
to see
one
return
will be good, the next
of
one be.
Yeah.
Creepshow, Tales of the Crypt. Well, what was the comic book that they're all based on? EC Comics.
Yes.
What's it called? The EC Comics released. Oh, it's on the tip of my tongue.
I'll try and stall you guys while someone thinks really hard about it.
I'll think really hard about it. Actually, there's a couple of really good anthology books that are out at the moment while I'm looking that up. One of them's an image one called Dia de los Muertos, I think it's called. And it's being drawn by, all the stories are being drawn by Riley Rosmo, who did the art for Debris, which I don't know if you read that limited series, which was really good. But it's all different stories. And there's also, every month, Dark Horse Presents must buy book. Like that is beautiful prestige format book that has some really really top writers and artists in it. Sometimes it's the first time you see that story. And there's also things like creator owned comics. So the EC Comics thing that we are trying to think of is Tales from the Crypt.
And
it wasn't Tales from the Crypt.
Okay, that was right.
You weren't thinking of Tomb of Dracula, were you?
There's that as well, but I don't think that was actually an anthology, was it?
I don't think. I don't think it was.
Anyway, Tales from the Crypt. Tales from the Crypt, and also Creepshow was based on an old EC Comics as well. So it's like you sit there and go, "That's what we need to bring back," and that's what the Comics Code destroyed.
It's true because
really,
when the Comics Code came out, it was an answer to all of that stuff, trying to cut down the violence of comic books. So that they destroyed all of that stuff basically and gave birth to superheroes what we've got today.
It's funny because people like Steve Niles have been largely spoken about as being like, you know, the revival of horror in comics.
Yeah,
this is the guy who did 30 Days a Night, and he's doing a few other horror comics at the moment. It's something that's not really done a lot in comics anymore.
Horror comics or anthologies. We have an abundance of horror comics.
But I think good horror comics. I don't think, you know, you don't.
There's
a couple of good ones out at the moment.
I think really, really.
Walking Dead. Vampire.
See, I would argue that Walking Dead's not a horror comic.
Have you guys read on Bedlam by Nick Spencer?
It's a bit better like that. I think it's slowly getting back there.
I think there's a bunch of horror at the moment. It's what I want to see is a return of that anthology format. Where it's tongue in cheek.
Yes.
You know,
just like Tales
over
from
the top, kind of like just have fun with it, you know, and you're getting all these power players to come in and write and draw
like,
this stuff.
I'd love to know what like someone like Geoff Johns would do, you know, with
cut him free and basically say do whatever you want, you know.
And it'd be good if they did kind of did them like a Simpsons horror anthology where you could kill off characters.
Yeah,
that just, you know.
Well, it's like Marvel does their Marvel Halloween special as well. They do that every year, and DC does a Halloween special every
That's
year
true.
As well.
I do those.
I'd like to see more of that.
That'd be nice.
Did you read the Action Comics one recently that Grant Morrison did, where it was the ghosts in the Fortress of Solitude?
No.
It's very entertaining, yeah.
I'll have to read that.
His Action Comics run has improved a lot.
He's leaving this.
Yeah, he just finished it. It was a fantastic
It's improved. He's gone.
And then, yeah, I know.
And then Andy Diggle will take over for an issue, and then Tony Stanley.
Have you guys seen the preview for the Andy Diggle one?
No, I haven't.
It's in the back of like half the DC books.
Oh, okay.
The artwork's not very
inspiring. Yeah, but
inspiring.
It's finished. He only did one. He's already walked. He's been fired.
Really?
Yeah.
We talked about this last week. It's he walked due to creative...
Oh, he walked. That's
you know, he walked due to creative concerns.
After one issue.
After one issue. Tony S. Daniel, who was the artist, has taken over the writing of the other two as well. And then we don't know who's going to be
when
doing...
When did he walk?
Like, literally about a week or two ago.
And only one issue?
Yeah.
What's the turnaround on Action Comics?
So I don't know what's going to happen with it. It's a
disaster. Wouldn't the issues like he's been working? Wouldn't
ahead,
he? But... Yeah, I thought they would have been ahead like three or four issues.
Maybe not. But
how bizarre!
It is weird.
A very very strange. DC is imploding on itself, dudes.
Mm.
This is the problem. It's like, how can we not get Superman right? Just.
And speaking of DC Comics imploding, I just had a look at this headline. I think their animation department's about to implode.
Yes, no. there's some big movie news coming up, so I'm just going to hit this button so we can talk about it.
Get to this quick.
Look, before we get on to that story, I just wanted to start us off with a bit of a trailer. Finally, after hearing about this for ages, the first footage from the Wolverine has dropped. And there was teasers. This is one of those things where we were getting 6-second teasers as well, because thanks to Twitter and Vine, we can actually release 6-second trailers of things as well. Then you got a teaser for the teaser, and now this is the first full trailer came out. So it seems to be more story based and definitely based on that Claremont and Miller run. So let's just have a listen to the trailer.
Eternity can be a curse. The losses you have had to suffer. A man can run out of things to live for. Lose his purpose. That hurt.
I wouldn't bother with them. I've been trying to find you for over a year. My employer is dying. He wants to thank you for saving his life. It's an honor to meet the Wolverine.
That's not who I am anymore. I didn't send for you only to thank you, Logan. I wanted to repay you. A gift to equal the life you gave me. You have struggled long enough. Our company can do anything. I can make you mortal. Not healing it before.
Yeah, so that, I mean, look, the footage that we've seen so far of that, it looks kind of good, but then so was the first trailer for the first Wolverine movie.
Yeah, that was my first reaction was, I went, that looks awesome, and then I went, wait a minute, a couple of years ago when Wolverine came out, I thought that trailer looked awesome.
We've spoken about this, though. I mean, I don't hate Wolverine Origins.
No, I don't either. I don't hate, not like Josh, our co-host on another show. I'm not vehemently against. I just don't think it's a very good film.
No, and you know, it's definitely got massive problems. Look, X-Men is going to be a big chunk of Fox's superhero real estate for the next couple of years. Between that, Days of Future Past, and it's going to be another Fantastic Four film, though.
My question is, how do you take away a mutant's healing power? It's his mutation. It's not like it was like, and they talk about what they did to you. They didn't do the healing thing to him. They put the metal in his bones. You know what I mean? It's like, so I'm not quite sure what they're...
Which he survived because of his mutant
healing Because of his power. Mutant healing powers, exactly. So I'm a bit confused about that. But anyway, look, as I think you said, cautiously approaching this with a bit of enthusiasm, you know, maybe. I'm curious. I like the Wolverine character. I like Hugh Jackman. The trailer is good. We'll see where it goes.
Well, the huge movie news this week is a departure. For over 20 years, Bruce Timm has pretty much been the shepherd of DC's animated universe. He's now stepped down.
This is such a big
from
mistake.
That role.
No.
He's all the first stories came out that he'd left Warner's, but they've clarified that by saying that he's not left Warner's entirely. He stepped down from his role as supervising producer for the DC Universe animated DVDs, which is pretty much the very thing. But other things is he's going to be working on some secret projects. So he's not left Warner's. So he's still doing some stuff for them. Secret projects. Does anyone wonder whether or not they're maybe shepherding him towards their live action division?
Well, they could do worse because their live action division hasn't been good. And
but let's look at the list. I mean, this is the man who did Tiny Toon Adventures, Batman the Animated Series, Superman Animated Series, Batman New Adventures, Batman Beyond, Justice League, Justice League Unlimited, and a whole lot of the director.
And let's not forget that he just produced The Dark Knight Returns.
You know, and if you're going to go out on something, you go out on that.
Yeah.
This man is you know, animated.
He's an animation god.
Yeah.
Let's face it.
And he also created for Conan O'Brien The Flaming Sea. Look it up, kids.
ask your parents.
So it's it really is quite literally the end of an era.
Yeah. I just worry that the magic that is the DC animated universe is Bruce Timm, and you take him out of it, I'm a little concerned.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's amazing to think that it's been 20 years since Batman the Animated Series came out. That's phenomenal. Like, and that was top of its game at the time, and it still is phenomenal.
I will still stand by. I think that the Justice League and Justice League Unlimited were phenomenal television series.
Also, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because they completely captured what we wanted to see.
In a superhero team-up movie. Yeah. Exactly.
You guys watched Young Justice?
I quite like it. Nicholas, a regular audience member here, is a big fan of it. And I haven't watched all the second season yet, but I've watched the first season.
It's really well produced.
But, yeah.
No, I've just heard good things.
It is. You know, it's a really good series. Unfortunately, it's come to an end with the second series.
Didn't he also... Did he do Brave and the Bold? Did he do Brave and the Bold?
He must have. I'm not entirely sure. I'll have to look up his credits.
I'll have to look that up because I'm not sure. But that's a very different departure for him, but if it was him. But still, I heard some really good things about that.
Yeah, look, I mean, the two new ones that were coming out of Batman, Beware the Batman, and which is sort of an animation style of that really terrible Green Lantern animated series. Which he actually produced.
But yeah, that is a check against his name.
Yeah, and that was the last series he produced. And the other series that got coming out of that sort of really wacky Teen Titans Go Friendship is Magic or whatever it's called. It's the
it's the Teen Titans
My Little
Unicorn,
Pony, yeah,
My Little Pony thing. Yeah,
it's weird. So DC Powder animation might be going the way of the New 52.
Sounds like a financial.
It could just be he's tired and he wants to retire.
Well, I mean, it also
look at the amount of work he's doing.
Yeah, look, he was 52. Did it say he was 52 when he started? No, 50. The current 52-year-old. 52, and he's been doing it for 20 years. So since his 30s, he's been doing nothing but animated cartoons at Warner Brothers. I think he's probably tired.
I mean, you know, I wouldn't put it past them to say that he's been moving on to... He's still with Warner, so I wouldn't be surprised if he's going to be helping them develop film projects.
Yeah, or he's moving on to some more original content. He's just moving away from Superman.
Yeah, moving away from Cats. I mean, he has been doing nothing. But I mean, he is the best he is at what he does.
Yeah.
But, no, real shame. Speaking of DC series, and I did actually include this story in the show notes, was that DC have announced a new documentary to examine DC's villains called Necessary Evil, Villains of DC Comics, and it's going to be narrated by the legendary actor Christopher Lee.
I love
his
voice.
So that will be really good. Apparently they're... they're actually at WonderCon, which has just been, they're encouraging fans to turn up as their favorite villains to be.
Did you guys hear at all Christopher Lee's latest album?
The heavy metal.
The heavy metal.
He's doing heavy metal.
I heard it.
Isn't a heavy metal version of Christmas songs?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Oh, that was brilliant. But apparently Necessary Evil will explore DC's rogues in depth through interviews with famed creators, storytellers, and those who have crafted the personalities and profiles of many of the most notorious villains in comic book history. I'm reading from the press release there. Jeff Johns has also commented on that as well. So it'd be great. I think it'd be really interesting to look at that. And Black Manta will no doubt get a mention there, our favourite dildo.
You went there, I did.
Yeah,
didn't.
Look, someone had to, let's face it.
Look, I think this will be fun. I really do like documentaries about comic books. I really like it when they delve into it and dig into it.
I just wish they'd released ink on DVD.
God, so do I. Yeah. I've got that, and look, I'm not ashamed to admit it, but I've got this very poor quality copy that I really would like to replace with a legitimate one. If they would release it, I would pay for it.
I mean, ink, what's it called? Hink.
Ink, Alter Egos Exposed.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a 10-issue series. Interviewed everyone, including Grant Morrison, who we'll be talking about eventually. Speaking of movies, because this is movie news, Fox are not just going to be producing X-Men and Fantastic Four films till the end of time. They've also just optioned Mark Millar's and Dave Gibbons' Secret Service.
Now, wait a minute. Isn't Mark Millar the head of Fox's comic book universe? It's funny that they've optioned one of his.
And apparently it's been given a release date. It will be out 14th of November 2014. So
I actually haven't read Secret Service yet, because once again, this is one of those ones where, because I find Mark Millar is best read in a bulk, and so I've been waiting for the series to complete. I think it's got another two issues to go or something like that, and then I'll read it in one run.
Look, you know, Mark Millar's books have certainly been adapted before.
With varying success.
Did you know? I didn't realize that in a couple of months' time, Kick-Ass 3 is coming out as a comic book.
I had no idea they were doing it.
Neither did I. It's going to be like in June. Kick-Ass 3 will start. So talk about milking the cow. I mean, it's inevitable. But
well, we do need to conclude the story, because remember, Kick-Ass 2 just leaves it hanging up in the air.
That's true, because she's just gone off to jail.
Yeah, they just drove her off in the police truck. And you go, hey, people. Hello.
Well, do you guys think Kick-Ass is a better movie than a comic?
I like them both. I like the first comic. I really liked as a comic.
I loved the first Kick-Ass comic. Comic was brilliant.
But, and I think the movie did an incredible job of bringing that to screen without watering it down too much.
And interestingly enough, what I thought was most clever about the film was the fact the comic book wasn't finished when they went into production, which means they actually had to come up with their own ending.
Yeah,
it's like Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, so basically they came up with their ending, and the comic book had its ending, and you never actually sit there with the movie going, oh, but that's not the ending. You kind of go, okay, that's their interpretation.
It's funny because I didn't like the ending of the film as much as I like the ending of the comic.
Me
either.
Because
the ending of the comic, basically, because he's been, Dave has been pretending that he's, not so much pretending, but going along with the lie that he's gay, so he can get close to this girl. At the end of the comic, quite realistically, she tells him, you know, where to go. In the movie, they get together.
Yeah. And the other thing I liked about the comic book, the other thing was the twist about the father, about Mindy's father, which was never addressed in the film.
Yes.
And I won't say it, because that is such an amazing twist that I never saw it coming.
No.
I never saw it coming. And I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah.
And I was actually disappointed that wasn't in the film, because
no,
it was.
No, I was too.
That
was
such a major event. But I liked them both. I thought Kick-Ass, the movie, was a really good adaptation of an excellent comic book.
Yeah. And speaking of the movie, we have a second trailer for Kick-Ass 2. Another red band trailer, so there will be some swearing in this. It does use all the words. Some of it's some of it is similar to the last one we saw, but there's a lot of new stuff. This trailer largely focuses on Hit Girl,
right?
Because I think my understanding is that the first part of the new Kick-Ass movie will be all Hit Girl all the time.
So they basically combined the two miniseries together.
Exactly right. So let's just have a listen to that.
I know your father didn't give you a normal childhood, but you're just starting high school. And this is your chance for a new start. Promise me that you'll try to live your life like a normal girl.
cross my heart. Hope to die.
All right, ladies, let's get started. Mindy, you're up. Down the street.
I wanna hold you, wanna hold you. Four tigers. No escape.
Game on, cocksuckers. I
know a girl. Aren't you tired of being on your own? Don't you want to belong to something bigger than you? I've got a
hunch. Together we can make a difference.
Hell yeah!
What do you say? You in?
Why the hell not?
We try to have fun. Otherwise, what's the point?
Whoa! I don't need to spend the next 4 years of my life trying to figure out who I am. Because I already know. I'm Hit Girl. Maybe he's a dyke. Maybe I'll jam my foot up your snatch.
Oh, I didn't see that line coming.
I already love this movie.
I didn't even have to see it.
Just that, like, I think they had to give.
I had no dialogue in my headphones at all.
Oh, really?
I just had the down on down. Really? You guys laugh, and I don't know what you're talking about.
We'll show you after the show.
No, it's an awesome.
I'm like, you go. It says all the words, and I'm going.
There's no words.
You thought I was just messing with you and playing an orchestral number. No, it's really good. I think that line too will, and just for the benefit of Dave, the line was, maybe I'll jam my foot up your snatch, was going to outdo her infamous line from the first film, which was in the comic book as well. Which
I don't think anything will outdo the 10-year-old girl delivering that line.
No, because so. Chloe Grace Moretz is older now, and they're playing her as a 15-year-old because the comic book as well can keep her as a young girl, a year on.
But so even in the comic book, she's still supposed to be about 14 now. Yeah, she's in high school.
Yeah, it's true. So they have been writing these books with the films in mind simultaneously.
Yeah.
So they're probably doing.
They have made her a
little
bit older.
She still seems younger and smaller in the comics.
Yeah, she doesn't look so small in the movie anymore.
No, but look. Chloe Moretz is an awesome actress.
I think she's awesome. She is the find of the century.
Yeah, because that was her big debut, but she was also in Let Me In.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to her as Carrie. I think that she's actually a pretty good choice.
I think if they're going to remake Carrie...
I'm a big Stephen King fan.
Yeah, totally use her. Yeah, I know you're a big Stephen King fan. Yeah.
What's the caption on it? You will know her name.
Yeah. And I love that poster because they don't even have the word Carrie anywhere on that poster. And it's just her dripping in blood. You all know her name. And it's like, yes, I do.
Yes.
So really, really looking forward to that. That is movie news for this week. So I think without any further ado, we should move straight on to this.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
The pick of the week this week, and I'll get it right this time, is Happy by Grant Morrison and Derek Robertson. This was originally released as a 4-issue miniseries from Image Comics. Image Comics. It is a awesome little miniseries. It started out a few months before Christmas and didn't quite get finished by Christmas, but it is effectively a twisted...
We almost should have saved it for our Christmas
special. There's a few other Christmas ones coming out, I think, so we'll certainly have it. But yes, it was much better than the last Image Comics Christmas special that we did.
Yes.
But basically, the long and the short of the story is that Nick Sachs is an ex-cop who's now a detective. Absolute wreck of a man. I love the fact that he's falling apart completely at the seams. He's quite literally, he's got his skin's flaking off with eczema. The
eczema is a great running gag.
It is a great
throughout
running gag. Yeah. And we should say up front, as much swearing as there was in Kick-Ass 2, we may not be able to avoid talking about it in Happy because
we'll try and work our way around it. But
every other panel,
I'm looking at this is page 9. I think it is.
Forget that page 1. The C bomb is
page
dropped.
One.
Yeah. C bomb is dropped 3 times.
<That's>
3 times. So I mean, I think Grant Morrison actually said he wanted to write characters who like talk the way that he does.
No.
And Basically, this Nick Sachs character, ex-cop, now shambles, complete wreck. We later find out it's because he stood up to the mob and his life kind of went off the rails after that. He wasn't, you know, in the best of shape before that. Mm. But he's has hired three people to kill him, which he then turn around and kills. But he gets knocked unconscious, or he's shot during that, isn't he? And then when he wakes up in a mob hospital. And this is where the first issue turns on its head. And he finds out he's the only person who can see a small blue flying horse named Happy, who is an imaginary friend.
So colorful compared to
everything else. Because this is, you know, this is
a book. It's not a horse. It's part a donkey, unicorn.
Corn, it's got a little bit of unicorn.
Don't know what it is.
And wings.
A little bit of Pegasus. Yeah.
And I kind of imagine that he talked like this. You know,
Chuck Jones cartoon. Yeah.
It's brilliant little creation there as well. Yeah, look, very much like a Chuck Jones creation. Look at that. Really old school animation thing. So compared to everything else, it looks like a cartoon.
Because everything else is really gritty, realistic. Mm.
And and he's in a mob hospital with blood flying everywhere. He knocks out a guy's teeth by the end of the first issue. And, you know, there's his character. He thinks it's a hallucination, but he's not. I'm 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 depth above a hallucination, Nick. Pappy basically says, look, little girl in trouble. Only you can help me. We've got whatever it is, 72 hours to help her. Let's get cracking. And he spends, you know, most of the rest of the thing faffing around, not quite believing it, using, you know, Happy the Horse to win at poker and, you know, getting his life back on track, all these sorts of things. So it is very much a straightforward find the missing girl story in some respects.
Mm. But like any Grant Morrison story.
It has this slight acid trip. Considering that
there's this thing called symbolism.
Yeah. But even more than symbolism, though, just some of the imagery in this where you sit there and go, I'm not sure what I'm looking at, and they never actually explain it. Yeah, things like the opening scene, he bursts in on a girl dressed like an angel in a corset.
Yes,
with a cockroach,
blowing,
right?
Basically a guy who's turning into an insect.
Yeah.
I thought, was he just in an insect costume?
He was in an insect costume.
The thing is, you sit there
either way.
I know, the first time I read it, I thought that too, but he's in an insect costume holding a hammer.
Yeah, because he's going to knock her out. And so you sit there going, what am I looking at?
Are you guys big fans of like Garth Ennis?
Depending on what he does. Garth Ennis is one of those writers where, as an example, Welcome Back, Frank.
Yes.
Genius. Yeah. Okay?
And Preacher.
And Preacher.
But I was about to say, Preacher, I think, starts incredibly strong, and halfway through the run, it's almost like he lost interest. Mm, and basically it goes in these weird directions.
Or like where Jesse becomes sort of the sheriff.
That's actually the turning point for me, is when he became the sheriff.
I still think it came
around,
though.
The entire second half of that book
from
that point onwards, I kind of go, yeah, I could take it or leave it. Up until then, it's a compelling read.
Did you read The Boys?
I haven't read The Boys, actually.
Phenomenal run.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I feel that this book is a dig at
Ennis.
Garth Ennis Mark Millar and all these like
gritty,
you know, dark
comics. I'll be a little bit controversial though, and I'll say that I enjoyed this more than any part of Preacher.
That's totally fair enough.
And I think, it's a limited
also,
run.
It doesn't outlast its welcome.
No, exactly. Yeah.
Because I think that's why there's so much like a ridiculous amount of swearing in Happy. Like ridiculous. Yeah. And like you look at Garth Ennis and it's pretty
but
much
I have
the same.
A feeling though as well. I mean, let's face it, Grant Morrison, if you listen to that interview with him with Kevin Smith, Grant Morrison was raised on the wrong side of the tracks. He was raised in absolute poverty, blah blah blah.
He's Glaswegian, isn't he?
This is probably how he talks every single day. And he went, I'm gonna write this book myself.
No,
I'm just gonna write
it. Don't get me wrong, I think there are a lot of elements to Happy.
Yeah.
I just felt that that's part of it.
That's just Grant Morrison. Yeah, I think that's Grant Morrison cutting
loose. There's a bit of it, because Happy the Horse doesn't even appear until the real end of the first issue, really.
Mm.
Just prior to that, it's a very, straightforward. If you've read a lot of indie comics, it's like you're going through
it
the motions.
It is,
And then
suddenly the book just turns.
And then it turns,
what
does this guy need to get him out of his funk? Like, why are these comic books so super serious all the time? Mm. Let's have some fun back in our
what I love about
own comics.
It, though, is the fact that Happy is introduced actually on page 16, I think, of this book.
Yeah.
It's not even near the end. Mm.
But
he's only introduced. Yeah, I'm saying. But I love the fact that Grant Morrison decides to introduce him as just feathers.
Yes.
So it's like he's in the ambulance, a blue feather falls by, and you go, what was that?
Yeah, yeah. There's hints of it.
These little hints, you're going, What is going on in this?
And, I love and then you have to sit on it for a month.
You see the horse and you go, pardon?
The book is funny too, though.
Oh, it is.
It's hilarious.
And I think one of the things is playing off that dichotomy between the super serious and the cartoon horse. That often Nick is doing these really violent things, and you know, Happy's off on the third line making commentary about it. You know, and it's like, it's great. I love that he's just like this passive observer to this really, as you said, like, you know, your textbook gritty comic book world. And I love that about it.
Considering that Hit Girl has already kind of blown us out of the water, I'm going to quote something from Happy, which does have the F word in it. So please beware. I just love this is from the panel of Happy. This is from the first time he sees a feather fall. Now he's in the ambulance, he's got the oxygen mask on, he's basically semi-conscious, and you hear morphine drip, nitroglycerin, he's stabilized, and then you hear nitro blippity, and he goes plop, and then his reaction, he just goes, what the fuck? And at that point, you as the reader are going, yeah.
And I love, like, it's in the second issue, it's like they flat out, straight up, give you evidence that it's actually a real hallucination.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so you don't sit there going like, oh, is it real? Is it not? Yeah, yeah. He gets that out of the way. You know, you actually get to enjoy the story for what it is.
Yeah. No, I think that's the real genius of this book. That, as you said, he actually treats... That's the thing. I think a really good writer can treat something like that. If you treat it earnestly and with seriousness... you can actually get away with a lot more.
This is actually exactly what Richard Donner said when he made Superman the movie. And he said, if you're going to make a movie about a guy in big blue tights and a cape and he flies around, you have to play it absolutely dead straight.
Have fun with it, but play it dead straight.
But you play it dead straight, but then the humor comes out of the fact that you've played it dead straight. If you camp it up, it becomes silly. Happy does that. Happy basically plays it dead straight, and yet it's funny because you are, for all intents and purposes, you are the main character. And you're looking at this blue horse going, what the hell am I looking at? Especially when it makes its full-on appearance at the hospital. It's got the buck teeth. And he's sitting like, and it's so colourful.
What does he say? Like it's at the end of the first issue where Nick is like, you know, all the cops are coming in to the hospital. And the horse just says, you know, what have you got? Have you got a choice?
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm a blue horse with wings, but you know, it's the only option. Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
The last panel is the one you're talking about where he says, pay attention to the talking horse. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then he uses it to win at cards.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you know, it's great. And I love that because it's, you know, kind of what you'd actually
epic
do.
Epic train issue, you know.
Yeah. Oh, look, the thing, this is, I mean, look, this...
What does he say when he shoots that guy? He's like, oh, the pacemaker exploded.
I know. Yeah. Well, when he gets into the train, that issue is really interesting because it's the point where Happy stops being happy from because he actually sees how depressed everybody is at Christmas.
That's a hilarious thing. And as well as, like, you know, are you actually called Happy?
Yeah.
I am sad.
Well, it's a funny thing, and he goes to that whole issue. It's like he's watched Nick do some pretty horrible things at this point, but it's only when he sees how sad everyone is at Christmas that he loses his little heart, and he actually turns a different colour and droops out. And I love it. But let's make no mistake. As funny as that is, this book goes to some really dark places.
Oh, yes.
And this, I mean, effectively, we're talking about people who have been kidnapped. Kids who have been kidnapped by this depraved-looking Santa Claus for the amusement of people on the internet, basically.
Yeah, so basically forced rape of children by Santa Claus is the theme that is going on here.
The way they describe it, like, you know, when Nick finally confronts the guy, the guy who's actually behind this says something about, like, you know, I don't care whether some perverts on the net want, like, you know, like watching their eyes pop out of their heads as they get, you know, and the way it's described, it's like you don't have to see a thing, like, you know, to feel the stickiness of this.
And he
book,
takes
you know?
It to such levels, like how he finds out about that,
Is
by going to a church where there's nobody there.
Yeah.
All there is the preacher looking at this. Hideous,
you know, online,
like,
yeah.
You know, like, that's the thing. It's like Happy is a metaphor for whatever the hell you want it to be.
Yeah.
And I think Grant Morrison just, it's open ended. It can be anything.
Absolutely. No.
At one point, you're like, is it religious?
What's your thing? You know, I think it is that, as you said, because it's that parody of the whole Ennis thing, and it's very much an Ennis.
It's almost like he's working at demons. It's like he's basically going, here's everything on the page. Yeah. Make of it what you will.
I want to see Grant Morrison's dreams.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, there's the Invisibles for you. Yeah. I think one issue, I haven't read it yet, but he actually drew it himself because nobody else could replicate
what he
dreamed. Yeah. Anyway, well, that's another issue for another podcast.
I once had a dream about a small blue piece of cloth trying to stab me with a pen. I don't know if that's relevant.
But see, you can draw that, right?
Yeah, exactly. I can get a little
this is where Grant Morrison is such an interesting character, because we've actually talked about on this show where we sit there and go, boy, the Action Comics is going all over the place. We don't know what's happening with Action Comics, and Grant Morrison just is out of control, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then suddenly this gets released and you sit there and go, this is the Grant Morrison that everybody talks about, you know.
We couldn't know for sure what his intent was, I guess. Hey, we wouldn't know for sure.
I think his intent was I don't know, I can't speak for the man, but basically,
yeah, that's my problem. I don't want to
basically on, yeah. He has said in enough interviews now where basically he said he's giving up on capes.
Yes,
he's reached the end of that. He wants to, and his best stuff has always been his creator-owned or his original material. And I think he wants to explore that. And let's face it, when you look at any of these really, really creative artists, Alan Moore, Frank Miller, Grant Morrison, any of these
it
guys,
goes on, yeah.
You look at these people and you go, their best work has always been when they've finally broken the shackles. Frank Miller, arguably some of his best work is Sin City. Okay, you look at Alan Moore, his best work is absolutely things like V for Vendetta, Watchmen. Yeah. You know, when you break him out of that universe and let him do his own thing.
The book that we were talking about at the top of the show, East of West, Jonathan Hickman, Away from Capes.
Yeah.
Just
remarkable.
Yeah. Oh, it just unleashes his brain on page, you know.
And I think
Diggle with Ratcatcher. Oh,
absolutely,
you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, and you sit there and you look at these people and you say, go out and do your own thing. And produce something original. Produce what is in Grant Morrison's head.
I agree.
This
yeah.
is what's in Grant Morrison's head.
I agree with you. I agree with you 110%.
And he's not bound by rules or the universe.
I think
universe
that's what this is. I think this is completely reactionary to the whole creative artist being stifled.
And I think we're going to see a lot more of this because Grant Morrison is retiring from Capes and he wants to go off and do creative own stuff.
I think that's what Happy is, actually. Yeah. I think it's like, at the end of the day, you know, it's...
This is his purge.
This is exactly. This is like, look at what everybody else is doing with creator-owned comics. We have so much freedom. You know, F you, Garth Ennis.
Yeah.
Because there are so many things you could do.
Yeah.
Here's what you can do. Like, maybe it could be that. Like, someone sitting behind, like, Superman, Batman for 20 years, and now it's like, I have freedom, and
you know,
I'm going to go crazy.
This is like a Mark Millar nightmare.
This is really interesting. This is really interesting.
And
because...
just quickly, sorry, Richard.
No.
Is that, who does Grant Morrison get to do the artwork? He gets Derek Robinson, someone who's, like, infamous... for working with, like, you know, Garth Ennis and Warren Ellis and
true.
You know, like, yeah, and Derek Robertson is a genius. I don't know, I just think that's a funny connection to make, you know, that someone, you know.
You made a really good point there, Dave, though,
it's
about
so hyperbolic.
You made a really good point there about the freedom that creator-owned comics are given, and then some of them squander that freedom, and what they've effectively been doing, I think, and this is kind of where the FU to Mark Millar might be coming from, is that they actually try to recreate their movies on page, hyper-violent movies, whereas really Grant Morrison is, has, and always will be the sort of person who uses the comic book medium to do something that can't be done anywhere else. And actually, in fact, rather than doing what a lot of creator-owned comics do, is trying to create a really cinematic experience on page, he consciously messes with the cinematic experience. Starts it off, as you said, Dave, with that very standard cinematic opening, and then flips it, and suddenly you're in Grant Morrison's head.
He sends you into Wonderland.
And in that interview... Yeah. He actually said, I have no interest in cinema. He said, this is his format. This is what he does. And so Grant Morrison throws it all on the page. Mm. You're right. Mark Millar is looking at, how can I sell my stuff on? How can I make
it a movie? He's been very frank about that. He's actually making that with a movie in mind. He did it with Kick-Ass very consciously. He did it with...
Mark Millar's stuff is starting to feel mass-produced. Mm. He's starting to produce so many series at one time that as much as I like his stuff and I like his writing and everything else, it is like every time you turn around, there is another Millar world... Yeah. Title
this brings up like a really interesting sort of catch-22 situation I found myself in the last like few months or so, is that, you know, you read so many comic books that you sort of become attuned to like how similar everything is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then whenever you see something that's remotely different, you can't, it pops out, right? Yeah. So it becomes...
Yeah.
But when you find something like for me, for example, The Invisibles, that's just unlike anything I've ever seen.
Mm.
It's almost revelatory. Mm. Your head explodes at the how mind-blowingly genius.
It's exactly like, how I felt when I read Alias. Richard put me on Alias, and it was like, okay, it's another Capes. Okay, it's an alternate world Capes, whatever, blah, blah. I pick it up, and I look at it, and straight away, the artwork is completely different to any Capes book. Straight away, we've got adult themes. We've got this kind of seedy underbelly of Capes, and it just makes your head explode.
Yeah.
And you sit there and go, this is new.
And for me, we're talking about this before, and I know you like, we're talking about art styles we like, and the reason I like particular artists is because they do open my eyes up to that kind of new way of looking at a comic. And I mean, I think Derek Robinson does an amazing job in this, but for me, it's people like the late, great Seth Fisher, Jeff Darrow, Mike Allred, people who have a very singular style, and they create this vision on page which you can't see anywhere else. I mean, the artist for Get Jiro, I've forgotten his name. He's got a very Jeff Darrow sort of esque style as well. Going back before that, the Godfather, more Mobius. His artwork, which very directly influenced a lot of those artists that I've been talking about, with the exception of Allred. I mean, there was a book I remember reading when I first started reading comics again. There was a book called Green Lantern Will World, and I think it was, I can't remember who it was written by. It was either Geoff Johns or J.M. DeMatteis, I think. But the book was basically going into Green Lantern's subconscious, and it was written by this artist, Seth Fisher, who tragically died in Japan a few years ago, and sort of just as his career was taking off. But it's just... It's kind of like this. It's like someone's biggest dreams, literally in the most minute detail, is splashed across page. And these are the comics I like. These are the reasons I read comics.
Yeah.
And books like Happy, why we read comics, let's face it, because, you know, we read Capes because we're geeks.
That's flight of fantasy.
We're geeks. We love Cape stories.
And still find it sometimes, I think. Recently I read Jeff Loeb. He did Superman for All Seasons with Tim Sale.
Mm-hmm. Currently doing Nova.
Yes.
Exactly. Although apparently he's leaving after the first couple.
And that was one of the very best comic books I've ever read.
Mm.
And it was dealing with Superman. But it didn't deal with Superman, the action hero. The storyline, if I recommend everybody read this. Have you guys read All Seasons?
Mm.
Beautiful. The whole thing is entirely about him going back to Smallville after a series of years and realizing, you know, finding out what Clark Kent left behind and how Clark Kent, you know, how him leaving to Metropolis affected all these people like Lana and Ma and Pa Kent. And it was just beautiful. You know, that's all it was about.
Oh,
it,
I
you
definitely know, have to read this.
You know, another one thing about that. Sorry to sidetrack. But it deals with, like, Superman has godlike abilities, but because he's only ever really versed, like, human beings and things like that, he's never realized his full potential, because for him, flicking a finger is infinitely more powerful than anything he's ever encountered on Earth. So what is it that's
actually also addressed in the one of the Bruce Timm animated films, I think is it Doomsday, where basically he's hammering down and he's having his ass handed to him basically, and at one point he finally turns around and says, my entire life I've had to hold back. He goes, do you really want to see what I'm capable of? And he punches Doomsday so hard he goes through like five buildings across the city. And it's like, you sit there and go,
And when you read something that deals with that material, it just like it shows you that a great writer can bring anything out of anything. And I remember like 10 years ago, like listening to an interview of Neil Gaiman, and it's affected every art that I look at. And he said, you know, what's your advice for aspiring creators? And he said, just try and be you. Be the best you that you can be.
Yep,
I'm Neil Gaiman, and I might not be what I consider to be the greatest writer in the world, but I'm the best Neil Gaiman writer.
Mm-hmm.
And so nobody can copy me. Nobody can imitate me. They can. They'll try, but they'll fail. But they simply can't be me.
And we see that's that in comics what you want. All the time. Yeah. People imitate each other constantly, where you sit there and go, I can't tell the difference between this person and this person. They are the generic monthly stock writers and artists who the comic book industry is full of. Okay. And then you've got these standouts who are the ones that drive the industry. Your Chris Claremont's, your Frank Miller's, your, you know, what have you. And these are the ones where their names stand out because suddenly they bring something new to the table. Your Bendis's, your Loeb's, your what have you. And you go, these are the people who are the gods of the comic book world. They're the royalty. They're and there's a reason why they've become the royalty, because they are unique visions. They are the best that they can be of themselves.
Exactly,
and they're not trying to be somebody else.
And certainly there is nobody else quite like Grant Morrison.
Nobody like Grant Morrison.
And this is the thing, is like so many people complain about his Batman run. But it's like nobody else could have written that.
No. And the thing is, that's a
plus in my opinion.
You know what? And I love that run because Batman for me can get stale very quickly. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I really had no interest in reading another Batman book when New 52 came along until I saw how good Snyder was doing. And I love, on the flip side, I love Morrison's run because it is the only Batman story ever going to read, as you say, that is like that. It is. Yeah. I don't care whether it's good or bad. It's just a different take.
Yeah,
on
I
Batman.
Had a funny experience about this recently where I was talking to someone about Batman. They hadn't read comics. They weren't into that world. They'd just seen the Nolan films. And it was like, oh, what do you like about the Batman comics? And I was like, oh, you know, Bruce Wayne does this and this. And they're like, well, what do you recommend I read? And I was like, oh, I recommend you read Grant Morrison's run on Batman. It's really interesting. Oh yeah, well,
I don't know if I would have made that a starting point.
Well, but this is what was funny about it. It's funny because it's like he goes, you know, well, what's so good about it? And I'm like, well, it's Batman, blah blah. And he's like, And then I'm like, and then he goes in time, and he's like, what? He travels in time. Well, what? Tell me. You know, like, and they're really fascinated by like what I felt was like a really strange element.
This came out around Final Crisis time.
Yeah. He gets shot by a god bullet from Darkseid. That's right. And then they're all like, yeah, really? Wow. Because, like, for most people, it's like, well, what does Batman do?
Yeah.
I think if I was going to introduce people to Batman, I would probably introduce them to something a little bit more grounded.
I like to mess around with that. So
you don't want people reading comics, right?
No, but
as a comic book fan, I want to defend this because, like, as a comic book fan, you get a lot of crap all the time, like from even your friends. Well, like you're still reading the New 52, you're like, fuck off.
I'm just looking.
Hey. Sorry for the attack.
I'm just looking at Grant Morrison's bibliography here on Wikipedia. It is massive. The sheer amount of stuff that he has turned out. He's started in the UK. He's been writing for 35 years. He was first professionally published by the looks of it, about around 78. So he's been writing for a very long time.
Yeah, he was writing for Marvel UK
He was UK publishers. Then he wrote for Marvel UK. He wrote for Fleetway. He did a whole lot of 2000 AD.
It's interesting in that interview we talk about it a lot because it was such an eye-opening interview. He actually says it. I mean, he basically is a Marvel boy. And yet some of his most famous stuff is actually DC, which is really interesting, you know?
And it's like, you know, he's mostly done Batman stuff, but he also did a whole lot of Justice League.
He did
the
X-Men run that was phenomenal as well.
He did Justice League, and of course he did Animal Man run, which he did for Vertigo. In fact, and Doom Patrol and the Invisibles and things like that. I mean, look, this is a guy who's touched on. He did, of course, his new X-Men run, which is phenomenal. Particularly with that Frank Quietly art.
Frank Quietly, top five comic book artists. Frank Quietly.
There's a new series called coming out. All Stars.
He also did. Fantastic. He did a famous JLA run as well.
He didn't draw.
I'm talking about Grant Morrison.
Grant Morrison. Earth 2 starting with, and then JLA.
There's a new
I've just up to the Rock of Ages that Kevin Smith was going crazy about and really enjoying it.
There's a new series coming out. I think it's called Jupiter's Legacy. And it's coming out.
Yes, this is that.
This is the new one. It's actually
like 12 different creators.
It's our old pal Mark Millar again. Has written the first issue, and the art's going to be by Frank Quietly as well. And this has already sold 150,000 books on pre-orders.
Wow!
So it's an Image comic, and it's coming out in April, late April, and I've got this one on pre-order because I don't want to miss out. On that one, but look, I mean, Frank Quietly artwork, and that's the thing with Morrison, you get him with the right artist, and Quietly is someone who's got a very unique style, and it's totally, you know, Morrison's brain, as well. So
if you're looking for a good entry point into Grant Morrison, I'd recommend a book he did, a miniseries.
You mean into his work, not into Grant
Morrison. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hey, no, I'm entering Batman.
If you go by the Invisibles, just chant a lot, and your mind will travel, and you'll meet him in Grant Morrison. Other universe or whatever. Yeah, Joe the Barbarian, a miniseries from Vertigo. Okay. It's excellent. It's just, not to harp on it too long, but it's like a modern day reimagining of Where the Wild Things Are.
Ah.
But instead of monsters, it's famous popular culture.
Oh, I gotta read this. And,
yeah, it's excellent.
Yeah, definitely. I will actually that's one.
Okay, yeah, I'll have a read.
A little boy with diabetes.
Was that ongoing? Was it a mini series?
It was a mini series, from 2010, 11.
We should be doing that.
I think we should be doing that.
Beautiful. Yeah,
we'll have to get you back for that.
Yeah, I'd love to.
What we'll do is we'll source that one and then read it, and then we'll set a date for it.
Yeah, it just came out a few weeks ago in a trade paperback.
I remember reading The Filth a few years ago. I love The Filth too. The Filth was great. It was a 13 issue limited series. I liked that. I've never read, but I really want to read We Three.
Yes, I love We Three as well. Yeah, that's it. It's only 3 issues.
Yeah, exactly. And
not a Frank Quartley.
Yep, exactly. A lot of he collaborates with us, a lot of the same people. Have to read The Invisibles, as you said, is out as a massive omnibus issue. So, look, you know,
that might wrap up to be one of the very best comics I've ever looked at.
Oh, wow. Big call.
It's one of the most complex things.
That's finished now, isn't it?
Yeah, it finished in like the early 2000s, no, that's right, maybe, late 90s. So, yeah.
How many issues is it total?
I think it's like 70, 80.
Something. And is that the complete run?
Yes,
or is that
everything,
like a volume or
something? It's a complete omnibus.
Because like with Doom Patrol, he only did
two volumes
or something like that. Yeah. So, because it was already running before he joined it. Yeah. And he kind of did something with it, you know, which was...
Yeah, this year already I've read, I think, like 4 different things from Morrison.
I remember when it came out, Invisibles, it was...
Is Invisibles creator owned? Is it create it?
Yes, it's a Vertigo book, but he created it.
It was three volumes, effectively, wasn't it?
Yes.
So it's, there was 25 issues in the first volume,
and then like the last volume has 22 12, and counts 12. Down from 12 to 1.
Right.
I'm like nearly there. I'm in the last couple volumes.
Oh, I'm
definitely
going to have a look at this.
Yeah, amazingly cheap on Amazon too.
I saw that. I'll definitely have to.
In the stores here, it's like $120.
I'm heading to the comic book shop tomorrow, so I might actually have a look around there.
Have a look at it, but you're definitely cheaper online for that one.
Right. I picked it up for like $60 on Amazon brand new.
Yeah, no, look, if you're going to, and this is just by the way, we're talking about the Marvel Omnibus editions before, get them when they're released because Marvel don't do huge print runs on these.
Get them on pre-order.
Yeah,
Because the Death of Superman omnibus just came out, and I pre-ordered it on Amazon. Yeah, it was like $40 cheaper.
Yeah, they're cheaper, but they also disappear.
Yeah,
which is the thing. The Marvel ones, they're out of print. That Thor one I was talking about before, the Walt Simonson one, only came out last year. I bought it. You can't get it. It's out of print now.
Jeez, and it's fast.
So you know, get these things when you can because they're beautiful shelf fillers.
Yeah,
and really high quality prints as well. And a lot of Grant Morrison stuff is.
But just to bring it back, circle. I think happy Grant Morrison must reads.
I would say.
Is the trade out for this yet, or is it still individual?
No, not yet.
It's coming out soon, though. I think it's in April. I'll also have a quick look on Amazon while we're talking. But you know, I can't highly recommend this book. And
I've got a friend who's dying to read, and
we will give just a little bit of a pre-warning, as we said at the beginning of this particular talk about it. It is not for the squeamish.
No.
It's incredibly violent. The language is unbelievable. Yeah. And some of the topic, I mean, it is grimy.
If you get this book as trade paperback, it comes out on April the 30th in the States, which would be the same date here, really. $7.13 on Amazon.
Wow.
So, you know, plus
shipping.
Yeah,
it's going to be $30 when it hits the stores.
So it's here, yeah. So, look, you know, pre-order this thing, get it, because that's 45% off on pre-order.
Yeah.
So it's normally going to be another $5 off, so $6 or so. So get this thing now, you won't regret it. Of course,
absolutely.
It is, but as David said, it's a mature reader's line.
Yeah, mature reader.
Right, so we've gushed a fair bit about Happy. Dave, thank you once again for joining us our little studio, which is slightly cooler than it was last week.
Finally started to turn. We'll have some winter months now, which will be lovely. And let me be nice and cool in the studio. What we should talk about before we finish up here today, Richard, is merchandise.
Merchandise, yes. We don't have as Kevin Smith does, we don't have our Jonathan Livingston cell goal to fly through and give us. But we do actually have merchandise.
The bird of salesmanship. The bird.
And there will be some new stuff added to it. We're actually building on it. So at the moment, there's T-shirts and a mug.
Hey, why don't we just play, have you got Girl from Ipanema?
I could do that, yes.
There, just so we can throw in a bit of that. So.
All right,
hey people.
Hey.
We hope you've enjoyed this free podcast that we bring to you weekly for free absolutely nothing. But we do like to make some money every now and then. So if you head to behindthepanels.net, look over on the right-hand side, and you will see a link to the new Cafe Press shop where you can buy all sorts of crazy merchandise. And by crazy, we mean mugs and t-shirts at the moment.
But there will be crazier stuff coming. I believe that we might be having coming up some iPad, iPhone cases, maybe a G-string. Yes, you heard me right.
Yes, I will buy the G-string.
There will be Behind the Panels pajamas coming
soon. Will
there
be pencils?
Pencils? I haven't seen pencils on those.
Yeah, yeah, cool. A pen would be.
But we will have buttons. We'll have stickers will be coming.
If you go to cafepress.com and have a look at the sorts of things, we can pretty much put our logo on anything.
Pretty much.
If there's a specific thing that you guys would like.
I think we're getting a wall clock.
A wall clock. Yeah, if you guys would like to see something with our logo on it, write to feedback at behindthepanels.net or hit us up on the Facebook at facebook.com/behindthepanels. But you can buy t-shirts with things on them like our logo and...
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And our favourite.
Stop, you fool! You're running into the electrical omniverter.
So,
now, if there's also a great quote that you've heard on this show that you think should be on a t-shirt, also send that in.
Yes, I think one of them that came directly out of a show was, it's sensational without the ism.
All the sensational, none of the ism.
Fuck you, Garth Ennis.
maybe not.
we might be carrying an explicit tag for this episode. I think
that's three now.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I think I'm the only one who hasn't said fuck yet.
Oh,
so there you go.
You know, one of the actual pieces of feedback we had on iTunes was none of the profanity, a nice clean show. Well, this episode just blew that out of the water.
You can't cover Grant Morrison's Happy without dropping a few bombs in
there. Yeah. So kids, don't read Happy.
Well, as the music runs to a conclusion here, go out, grab yourself a t-shirt, help support the show. Everything that's made from the merchandise does go back into the show. So
all of it is made by workhouse children somewhere in a third
Bruce
world
Tim
nation.
with a scungy looking Santa Claus.
Yeah. I did think we mentioned this. I think there's a scene in Happy which had mentioned where it's got a drugged out fat Santa Claus on a toilet shooting out into his leg or something.
Do you notice how in the first issue he walks out of a methadone
clinic? Yeah. This, I said last week, this ain't your daddy's Santa Claus.
No, this is
actually, and one of the best scenes in this book, and we didn't mention it, was where, because Santa can see the imaginary friends, is when Happy rounds up all of the imaginary friends that he can find, and they attack Santa en masse in one of the best splash pages you'll see in comics.
It's the only splash page in the whole four issues as well.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is too. The rest of it's all small panel. It's fantastic. So it's highly recommended.
Highly recommended. Go read it.
So, on Behind the Panels next week, because that's right, we're normal again.
We're normal again!
Yay! We're back to being a weekly show. So we will be doing the epic.
And
epic.
At some point, we'll be back to being an hourly show as well.
That's true. We're going for an hour and 41
That's
minutes.
That's my fault there.
No, I think it was the fact that I stumbled drunk through the first 20 minutes of this show as well.
I kept asking you guys questions. What do you think about our running time, Richard?
I think it's going well. I think if we can stretch it out. We can always get this up to 2 hours, can't we? No, look, two big, massive things we're doing for the next week. We will be interviewing Chris Claremont. We'll be talking to him all about his classic work, some of his newest stuff, including his ebooks, and but also those classic runs. In particular, the book that we will be doing next week, which we've just labelled X-Men, The Phoenix Saga, The Dark Phoenix Saga, and Days of Future Past.
So just basically all of it.
All of it. What we're talking about is basically the reboot of X-Men after its 5-year absence back in the 70s, back when a time when X-Men wasn't the must-buy title that it is today. Ooh. So we're starting with Giant Size X-Men number 1 and then going through from X-Men 94, or Uncanny X-Men as it became, 94, through to issue 142. So we're looking at about 50 issues worth of comics there. It's going to be big. It'll be spoilers and all. This is classic stuff, and we'll pepper some of those Chris Claremont comments throughout that episode as well. Really looking forward to this, but we've got our work cut out for us.
It is a big week, people.
Yeah, so Thanks again for stopping by. This has been Behind the Panels. You can find us online at behindthepanels.net. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/behindthepanels. And you can hit up our guest, Dave Longo, at...
You can find me through you guys.
Or
on Twitter, at Dave Longo.
There you go.
There you go. I think that's it for our show.
That's it.
We'll see you next week.
Yeah.
Yeah?
When we'll try and get this... I don't think we can get the time down for that next week's episode.
Next week is going to be a long one, because it is a lot of issues to talk about, a lot of story arcs to talk about, and of course we will also have the Chris Claremont stuff, which we're going to be very excited about.
Let's just
about.
Do like a 10-page Archie comic the week after that.
Yeah, I think so. I think we need to find a one-shot for the week after that.
We'll just read the back of the newspaper and just run down.
No, you should review that news thing at the end of the New 52 comics.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. I actually heard this is a comment I heard on another podcast. I can't remember which one, but they were saying, I wonder who their sources are for that this thing, because they have this fake Channel 52 thing at the end.
It's
of
so stupid.
And it's kind of like, well, you know, so and so has found out that he's gone to space and found it. It's like, where are these news reporters got their scoop report?
Yeah,
you know,
and why is Bug being a reporter for them, and why none of it makes sense.
It's weird, and it doesn't need to happen. It could just, I mean, they're trying to do a fun way of, like, you know, pimping all their other books.
So you guys could totally do a whole show on it.
I think we did it.
That was my comments about it.
I think that's it. I think
we'll cut that bit out.
So that'll be issue 54 or something of Behind the Panels. Stay tuned for that
point one.
Point one. Yeah. Behind the Panels now, point one. We'll call it.
Where all you do is talk about the shit next to
PC. David, challenge accepted. We're going to put that out as a special. All right, folks. Thanks again for stopping by. We'll see you next week. And we're going to go out on another little bit of a tune that is going to put a little happy step in your...
Steppy,
hap thing, chappy. It's, you'll recognize this one immediately. See you, folks.
Bye.
Hello, boys and girls. This is your old pal, Stinky Wizzleteeth. This is a song about a whale. No! This is a song about being happy. That's right. It's the happy, happy, joy, joy song.
Happy, happy, joy, joy, happy, happy, joy, joy. Happy, happy, joy, joy, happy, happy, joy, joy. Happy, happy, joy, joy, happy, happy, joy, joy. Happy, happy, joy, joy, joy.
I don't think you're happy enough. That's right. I'll teach you to be happy. I'll teach your grandmother to suck eggs. Now, boys and girls, let's try it again.
Happy, happy, joy, joy, happy, happy, joy, joy, happy, happy, joy, joy, happy, happy, joy.